All right, thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. Yeah, I remember, like, I was like 14, 15 years old, and I walked into this psychic tent at the fair, and it felt like a little scary, a little potentially scammy in a way, to be honest. And I wasn't really sure what to expect and what to do. Turns out the lady was the nicest person in the world. She was just so cool. And I felt like she actually did get to know me. There was something there where she was just able to read. I don't know if she was reading me or reading something from the stars. I don't know. But I felt really good about talking to this person. And I ended up talking to her for a while. And I think, I don't know, it was like 10 bucks, 20 bucks, something like that. This is 90s money. So, you know, not much. felt like a lot back then, probably. But it was interesting to me. And so I wanted to learn a little bit more about this. So today I've got somebody that has been doing readings since 1973. She's a psychic, a channel, a medium. Corby Midlide, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for asking, Russ.
What was going on back then when I was getting this reading? Is she actually reading me, or is she like, what's being read, I guess, is the question.
You know, that's like saying, what did the mechanic do to my car when I don't know your car or the mechanic or what was wrong?
Right,
if she
right.
was real. Mm-hmm. She might have been getting a direct download from your guides, her guides, whatever. It depends on what tools she used, tarot, astrology, numerology, channeling, the whole nine yards. So when we intuitives, which is the polite word for psychics, it depends on the tools we use. And when the universe kind of hands us our draft notice and says, hello, you're working for me, it goes rifling through our internal file cabinet to see what we're good at. Now, with me, what's my background? Theater major at Brown University, professional actress in New York. So I understand characters and storylines. Mm-hmm. Words are my drug of choice. I'm an author, so I know how to tell the story. And I have been interested in history since I was a wee thing in single digits. You put that all together, my particular favorite tools are tarot and oracle cards, because they weave a story for me, and past life retrieval. Mm. On the other hand, you asked me to do spirit art. Forget it. I can't draw a stick figure with a sharp pencil and a lot of prayer. That is not in my wheelhouse.
I'm asking you questions that are super like basic, and I probably sound like I know nothing about this, and that's because I don't. So let's go with this here. Okay. What do tarot cards do?
Tarot cards, if you want the honest thing, they're pictures on pieces of paper.
Okay.
Like, they're not evil. Oh my God, she's got tarot cards. Are they going to haunt me? No, get real. But they have been around for hundreds of years. So there is an archetypal storyline within it. All tarot decks have 78 cards. There are 22 of what they call the major arcana. I refer to that as the concentrated God energy in the deck, and four suits. And the suits are just like the suits we have in a standard deck. You've got pentacles, which are like your diamonds. You've got swords, which is like your spades. You've got cups, which is like your hearts. And you've got wands or rods, which is like your clubs. It's one of the reasons you may sometimes see gypsies using a standard playing card deck. What this does is this gives me a storyline to explain to people. But with rookies, I do say, look, there are three cards that weird out rookies: death, the devil, and the tower. If they come up, I'll tell you what they mean, because it ain't that. And they go, it's like people see the death card and they think, oh my God, I'm going to be hit by a bus on Tuesday. No. It talks about death of an old way of life, death of what you've outgrown, death of what was never you in the first place, change, transformation. The tower card shows lightning and fire and a tower exploding and people falling off it. And people see that and panic and explain, no. I want you to think of it like the imploding sports stadium card. Red Sox want to build a new stadium. They got to blow up Fenway first and clear the ground. Right. So that card is, there's stuff coming. You're going to have to simplify. You're going to have to make changes. But that's all it is. And the devil card is not Mr. Horns in a Tail. It is not even Jack Nicholson in The Witches of Eastwick. It is being bedeviled by something, someone, or some situation, or holding yourself back from your highest and best.
Okay.
See how just with those three examples,
yeah,
it is not going to, oh, you have a family curse. How many in your family? Both, you have both. No, no. Those are the fake gypsies, and we don't do that here.
Right, right. So how did you determine that this was something that you're able to do?
When I was nine, I read a book called The Witch Family by Eleanor Estes, and I thought, oh, well, there's magic in the world. I want to go find it. In 1973, when I was a senior in high school, and yes, that tells you how old I am, I was working part-time at Spencer Gifts, and they had the James Bond 007 tarot deck, and I bought it because we were all hippies. You had your elephant bell-bottoms and your fringe jacket and your deck. Now, 5 years later, everybody else had moved on to roller skates and disco balls, but I was fascinated by the stories I was seeing in the cards. So for 20 years, read for friends, making sure that I kept my ego out of the way, and I was a clear channel for the information coming through. All of a sudden in the early 90s, I could do hands-on healing and talk to dead people with no training, which is when the universe handed me my draft notice and said, hello, you're working for us. Hmm. So I did it part-time. Meanwhile, a very checkered career, actress, author, inspirational speaker, legal assistant, video producer, executive recruiter, writer for the graphic series novel of Quest. But then 9/11 comes along. And as we watch the towers burn, I turn to my husband. And I say, I have to do the psychic work full time. People need to know there are other answers out there. He said, I believe in you. Go do it. And so it's been 20 years. I work 6 days a week, 14 hours a day. I read 1,000 people a year. And I get to get up in the morning. I don't have to get up in the morning.
Right.
That is the key.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great to find something that you enjoy. Because there's so many people that I've talked to, you know, like just on a regular basis. Like you could just go to Starbucks and talk to somebody in the morning, you know, with coffee. And they're just so, they don't want to go to work. They don't want to get up. They don't want to do their thing. It's great that you have found that. When you're talking to people and you find people like that are kind of stressed out, because there's probably people that are turning to psychics maybe at the times in their life when they're trying to figure something out, when they're not happy. What are those conversations like?
Well, it depends. Are they really interested in change, or are they just going to every single psychic to find the answer they want? And, you know, I've written a book called The Psychic Yellow Brick Road, How to Find the Real Wizards and Avoid the Flying Monkeys. And in here, I give a couple of typical examples of people who really don't want change. But does Bruce think about me? No. Has he ever thought about me? Not the way you want. If I do such and such, will he think about me? No. Is he going to call soon? He's not. Well, if he isn't going to call soon, is he going to call later? And they beat on the psychic until the psychic just says, fine. Yes, he loves you and he wants 7 babies with you, but he just doesn't know it yet. Oh, good. I thought so. Don't do that. If somebody seriously says, I really am miserable, I want to get out of it, but I don't know what to do, then we can look at the emotional basis underneath. We can look at the situation. We can look at their options. I am not a fortune teller. I am an intuitive consultant. Big difference. So, for instance, if someone said, my career sucks, I don't know what to do, I would say to them, okay, 3 ways we can look at it. You do want to stay where you are, but make the best of it. You want to switch jobs or somebody else writes the paycheck, or you want to be an entrepreneur. Which is it? Now, that is not what some people call a cold reading, because each one of those involves a different multiple card tarot spread. For instance, if you said, yep, I want to open up my own broadcasting studio, I would not flip 3 cards and go wait until January and fire the second redhead. What the hell? It would be a card for you. A card for the energy around the business, a card for the brick and mortar location to look for, how to market it, clients, competition, staff, finances, what you need to know, and best possible outcome. Which is different from if you want to stay where you are, you, your boss, your boss's boss, all the way up to whoever is God, clients, customers, if you serve them, politics, finances, what you need to know, and best possible outcome. My job is not to amaze you with my wiki woo. I'm here in service. My job is to, if at all possible, put a rocket pack on your back so you leave a session with me having a good idea of how to make your life better and get what you want and need. Two different things.
It seems like it's fluid. It's not absolutely saying like, oh, this is what's going to happen. It's almost like this is what could happen if you choose this particular path.
But sometimes I do see things, which is one of my favorite stories. I was reading a woman and I saw a couple of possible challenges for her, which I told her. She looks at me, she says, "You suck," and she gets up and walks away. Okay, fine. Who is in my chair first? Doors open the next time up in Kitchener, Ontario. But this woman, she sits down, she says, "Last time I said you sucked," I said, "Yes, I remember. Because you told me I was probably going to take in a boarder and then I would want to sell my house." And I thought it was all bull. But now my daughter got pregnant and moved home and I want to sell my house to help raise my grandson. And I still don't like you, but I want to know what else you see. Don't shoot the messenger, woman.
Wow. Right. Yeah, that's got to be a problem for you because, yeah, you're the messenger of these various things. Yep. And they're not going to be happy about it.
This is why a dear friend, spiritual mentor, Wendy Pini, who created the series ElfQuest with her husband, Richard. One of her favorite sayings, which has always stuck with me, is praise and blame all the same. Yes, there are lots of people who think I only walk on water and just get my ankles wet. Oh, Corby is always correct and she's wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And then there are the you sucks. The mm-hmm. key is to both of them to smile and say, thank you for sharing. You may think that if you wish. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it's, you know, roller coaster. It's like, one of the Joni Mitchell songs, Puffed Up and Strutting When I Think I Win, Down and Shaken When I Think I Lose. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You're right. Doing this in service, yeah. Not for adulation.
Right. Well, I feel like a lot of this, like, because so I actually, one of the new things that I'm doing this season on this podcast mm-hmm. is I'm actually like walking around various areas and mm-hmm. talking to people and getting, you know, pulling in information. Yep. I'm excited because I'm actually doing that in Las Vegas next week, which is really cool. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to get some interesting ones from Las Vegas.
I'm going to tell you right there, do not ask me for lottery numbers.
Right.
Because me first. And if you're psychic, you're not at least driving a Lexus. How do you know she knows?
How does somebody choose and find a good psychic or vet a psychic to know if it's somebody that you should be going to?
You keep getting back to my book. That is why I wrote The Psychic Yellow Brick Road. There are 6,000 books on psychic development. Mm-hmm. There were no books out there on if you want to go to a psychic, how do you choose? How do you stay safe?
Yeah.
That's what this is about. So I've given them a mnemonic. It's the word psychic. And each one of those is a key to finding a good intuitive. The first one is professionalism. The psychic should be and act like a professional. They should respect other psychics in the field, respect you as a client, not meet you at the door in a bikini or a bathrobe. Okay, you choose one the way you would, seriously, you choose one the way you would choose a lawyer. You get references, right. Is your stuff kept confidential, etc. Next is sharing references. Please get references on all of us. We can, if you call us and say, could I have some references? If we're professionals, we have a half a dozen in our back pocket that mm-hmm. say, yeah, give her my phone number. I'll tell her. And if we have a good website, you're going to see a lot of testimonials on there. Why is you are in charge? No psychic should ever tell you that you have bad luck. Your life is so screwed up. They're the only ones that can save you. If so, leave. I recommend getting a recording of the session because you'll never remember everything. And if you're taking notes, you're not listening. Go back and review it. Some of the things are going to be right on. Some of them you're going to think, oh, this woman is crazy. And some of them you'll not sure, and then you'll put it away. And just like the woman in the kitchen, 5 months later, you realize, oh my God, she really knew what she was talking about. C stands for charges. Yes, we are allowed to charge. A lot of people say, well, if you're a psychic, it's a God-given gift. You should do it for free. Let me, my darlings, tell you about the show I did yesterday in Saratoga. $350 for the booth fee. Mm-hmm. Had to pay my front person. Advertising. Yeah. I am sitting in that booth nonstop. I read 24 people from 10 to 4:30, broke down my booth, and then did a past life gallery for an hour. I'm toast after that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, I deserve to get paid.
Yeah, you do.
H is here. I can fix anything for a price. Those are the psychics that tell you that your jewelry or your house or your stock portfolio, they're all cursed. So they have to take it and bless it on their altar. Guys, You may love me to bits. Do you know my cleaning lady? I don't want to be responsible for that stuff. So don't do that. Or they'll tell you that somehow they knew you in a past life and therefore you need to give them extra money or, you know, send them to college or something. Or whatever you believe in terms of religion is wrong. Or if you're coming off a bad relationship, they start to make moves on you. All of those are big wrongs. You get up, you leave, and you warn people against them. And then there's communication, connection. If we're good, tell other people. If we're not, tell us. If we're true intuitives in the business, we would like to learn how we can be better. It's that simple.
How about the fear around just being around this? Like, are you opening up some doors or something?
No, you're not. It depends on the psychic. It depends on the psychic. All right. I'm about as practical a psychic as you can get. I come across as the New Yorker that I am. There's nothing scary about me. A lot of people say it's like I'm sitting with my best friend. Now, there is a brilliant healer shaman that I work with and respect highly. And her name is Tiffany Butler. She's here also in the Capital District. But she is someone that can do spirit cleansings and works with the craft, witchcraft, if you will. She calls herself a dark witch. That's not a black witch, but it is that she clears darkness from places. Okay. That's the kind of thing that people could get scared of. But they look at me and it's like, it's not a problem. The thing to remember is if the psychic simply presents, these are the possibilities for you, fine. But it's when they do things like, and this is the reason I wrote the book. It was a 250 person expo I did up in Toronto. And you can't vet everybody who's going to be there. Even the promoters can't. So a woman was walking down the aisle and across from me was what I call a fake gypsy. She runs out, she grabs the woman. This is called hooking, and it's as bad as the other kind of hooking. She says, oh, you no need to pay $30, $40, $50. I'll reach a palm for 10. Come. Drags the woman behind her screen in the booth. 20 minutes later, we see that woman leaving crying hysterically. We all rush over what happened. And the gypsy had said, you have a family curse. How many in your family? 4. You have dog. $50 every family member. 25 for dog. He's small. Oh, wow. And told the woman if she didn't burn 400 specially blessed candles at the Roman Catholic Church, I bless real good. Only $1 candle. Her entire family was going to die in a car accident in 2 weeks. That's the crap.
Wow.
That's the crap.
Yeah. Something that I'm just thinking about. So, you said you were from New York. You mentioned earlier, you know, tearing down Fenway Park. That was noted, you know.
Well, here's why. When you live in Albany, New York area, you are 3.5 hours from the Sox and 3.5 hours from the Yankees. You're and so there are arguments, New York versus Boston, on every street corner.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And
my
brother happens to live in Boston in 77, so I know this box.
Well, the question here, though, is there's going to be your own bias, your own way of thinking on certain things, right?
My clients?
Yours, own bias. Like, how do you take that out and just pay attention to the data that you're receiving?
Because I remind myself I don't do their free will. Let's use the example, does Bruce love me? And I'll pull 5 cards. Mitzi, Bruce, the relationship, what they need to know and best possible outcome. If she says, I still don't know what to do, I pull my 3 threes. 3 cards for status quo. You just kind of bumble along. 3 cards for the come to Jesus meeting where you have serious counseling and draw a line in the sand. And 3 cards for hostile bye-bye. It's been nice. I'll send your postcard and you leave. Now, my own sense might, there might be a Beetlejuice sign on leave that guy. But if she looks at it and goes, I guess I'll just stick it out for a while longer, my mouth gets zipped because that's her free will choice. The only time I change that and I take off the wiki-woo turban and I put on my reverend collar is if she says she's been abused, gaslit, harmed. Then I will absolutely counsel her on how to leave safely.
Right.
Other than that, no, the mouth gets zipped. It's their free will and their choice.
Okay, let's talk a little about the tools of the trade here. We touched on the tarot cards earlier. There's something else that a lot of people might be familiar with, which is the Ouija board. Let's talk about that a little bit.
people play with Ouija boards and they don't know how to ground, center, and shield, which is set it up so energetically you're protected from the lower level crap that hangs out of the corner of Akashic and Karma. And they look at someone playing with a Ouija board without any protection. They go, hey, Sid, there's another one. Yes, Ouija boards can be useful. But I have had to handle two hysterical teenagers who the first time they put their hands on the little planchet and said, who's there, without any protection. What came through spelled backwards very fast was, I have an axe and I'm here to kill you. That's not their Uncle Danny. And for everybody who says, oh, it's in the toy department, how dangerous could it be? Because someone always brings that up. I say, okay, when I lecture, who here has a kid or a grandkid under 8, 10? Hands go up. All right, you. What's the kid's name? Joshy. How old is Joshy? Joshy's 7. Okay. Joshy comes and says, Grandma, Grandma, I got all A's on my report card. You said we could go get a toy. Let's go. And he drags you into the toy department and points out a box that says, my first chainsaw. Are you going to let him play with it by himself? No, you're not. You know, so get real.
Right. So how does it work? Because I mean, so many people think like, oh, this is just a toy, or, you know, oh, it can't be real because it says Parker Brothers on it or whoever makes it. But
I know that.
Like, what are you doing when you're using this?
What you're doing is you are trying to call down spirit energies. Okay.
Okay.
Can you get dead people through it? Yes. Can you get icky things through it? Yes. I will not use a Ouija board. Because also there is something called thought forms and thought energy. Why is Santa Claus so benevolent? It's because everybody imagines Santa Claus as jolly and wonderful and reindeer. You know, it's like, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Ouija boards have been so feared for so long that they, to me, have a negative bias.
Okay.
Things that I use. Yes, I use tarot cards. I also use oracle cards, which are kind of a new invention from 30-40.
Yeah, what are the difference? You mentioned that earlier. What are those?
Okay. Oracle cards do not have rules. They can be as many or as few as the artist wants. He can choose whatever designs he wants. He doesn't have to follow any rules. So if you know, you can't see it, everybody out there, but our host here is seeing that I have 8 different decks on my desk, 7 of which are oracle cards. And they each have a specific that they want to help with. That when I am looking at cards, I'll pick them up if the artwork calls me, and they will tell me when I get them home, we are specific to this. So I have a deck by John Gray, the guy who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Oh, yeah. It's about karma and relationships. I've got a deck by Brian Froud. He's the guy who did the artwork for Labyrinth and Dark Crystal. And it is the fairies oracle, but as I say, these are not your ootsy cutesy fairies. These guys march inside your head, rip up the floor tiles, and give you homework. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful deck that is based with Ganesh. Ganesh is the Lord of Obstacles in the Hindu pantheon, and because most Americans don't know who he is, I explain he is very beloved in India. Everybody has a statue of him somewhere in the house. And the American equivalent is you're going to South Philly, and the little Italian-American grandmother has the peeling statue of the Virgin Mary in the back by the barbecue and the tulips. It's that ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. And that's a very compassionate deck. The other thing I have, which surprises people, is I have a children's deck with pictures of little kitty. Okay. Why? Because when I am reading at an expo and it's crowded, and so my client has her little kid Muffin on her lap, and Muffin is going, mommy, 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 pull card, pull card, pull card. And mommy looks at me and says, oh, could you please let the kid pull a card? What am I going to do if all I have is a standard tarot deck? I'm going to go, oh, right. Look, Muffin, death. No. This has little kitties and puppies and squirrels and things like healthy diet. And take a closer look. And Muffin can pull a card. And then we get back to the reading. You know, that's simply one of the professional things you have to learn.
So how much of this is about reading the person versus like spiritual, like reading the spiritual world or past life or things like that?
It's pretty much combined, but again, it's what they want to know. Okay.
Okay.
Two things that for me are a direct download are dead people and past lives. Remember I said that spirit looks at what we're good at. I am a past life specialist. I've been in an international best-selling book series on pre-birth planning because of it. How do I explain that? Let's say there's somebody else here who is pretty good at past lives, and you give us both the same vision. if without a historical background, there to go, it's a long skirt, it's a real big hat, and there's something real fancy. So I guess maybe it's Europe and it's old fashioned. I could see the exact same thing and go, okay, she's in a hobble skirt, picture hat, that kind of ostrich feather, and she's in front of the Brandenburg Gate. So we're probably talking Berlin in 1911. Okay. And why are past lives important? Two quick stories. I don't just go and find out who you are because it may not make a difference. You want a past life from me, you give me an obsession, a phobia, a place you either love or hate, or a person. Woman comes to me and says, my son is 29. He won't make any decisions without me. He won't live more than a mile from me. I'm really worried. What's going on? Takes me about a minute. And I go upstairs, brainwise. And I say, okay, it's 1944, Utah Beach. So it's D-Day. I see your son. He's one of the soldiers. He's down on the beach. His leg's pretty mangled from shrapnel. You're his commanding officer. You're dragging him over a dune. You take some shrapnel too, but you both got out of there and you both live. And I open my eyes and she's very pale and she says, can you see my rank? I get, oh yeah, you were a sergeant. She goes, he's called me sergeant since he was 3 years old and we've never known why.
Wow.
Number two, a girl who's from the Midwest, has never had anything to do with the Civil War, knows nothing, but is fascinated by it. So I say, all right, I'm seeing you in a whitewashed room, very low ceiling. Two very tall gentlemen are standing there, but their heads are bent over because they're almost too tall for the room. And you are kneeling by the bed. The dress looks like it's 1862 or 63. It's a dark gray serge. You've got some black soutache on the peplum and the sleeves and the hem. And you're kneeling by a rickety iron bed. And in there is a very wizened, very old black woman who is dying. And all of you are grieving because you had managed to get her out from a Mississippi plantation. And she was almost to her destination on the Underground Railroad, but she was dying and she wouldn't make it. And I opened my eyes and this woman is crying. And when she could finally speak, she said, I have had that exact dream for 20 years and I have never known what it was.
Wow.
That's why past lives.
Yeah.
Not, you must have been Anne Boleyn because you can't wear turtlenecks. No.
I would think that when you tell people that you can do this, it's kind of like, I did stand-up comedy for a little bit. I've done improv theater, right? Give me a stage, a microphone, and a brick wall behind me so that I can actually like do this for real. I can't, I'm not going to just like turn this on.
You know, when I went to Canada to do shows and I'd cross over, very often I would get, all right, you're a psychic, tell me something.
Yeah.
And I'd just look at them and grin. I'd say, okay, you're overworked, you're underpaid, and you can't understand why Americans are such bastards. And they would break up and I'd go right through. The negative part of that is if I'm at an expo and you lean over my desk and you say, okay, tell me something you couldn't know about me. And if you're right, I'll have a reading. I will look at you and smile and say, I'm sorry. I don't roll over and fetch either. And my back is turned and you will not get in my booth. You treat me with respect.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I just feel like I'm sure you get a ton of that though, right? Like, mm-hmm. where people are just always doing that sort of thing. And I just feel like it is so disrespectful. And it's like,
they don't know the trick for me.
Right.
You know, what I explain to people with that is, you know, just stopping the psychic and, you know, give me a reading right now. That's like, you know, you meet your OBGYN at a cocktail party and he lifts your skirt. You didn't ask him and it's the wrong venue. Okay. And frankly, the more I can get them to laugh, the more it disarms them and they don't get mad that I won't do it.
Right.
You know, right. I don't know, to be blunt, another psychic who is as damn funny as I am. I don't. But part of it is my theater training.
Right.
Part of it is I have supreme self-confidence about what I do. It doesn't mean I think my aura don't stink, but I've been doing this for 50 years. So I know I'm not a fluke.
Right.
And when you can get someone to laugh, they lower their internal emotional shields and the information can get in.
Have you ever like had somebody where they've come to you and, you know, they've let's say paid the fee, they're there, they're a client, and you just can't pull anything, like nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing happens.
Absolutely.
What do you do in those cases?
I say, Mrs. Nick Allerser, I'm so sorry. I am not getting anything. I'm not connecting with you. It's not your fault, but it just isn't working. And I will give them their money back. And perhaps if it's in an expo, I'll tell them where else they might get a better connection. Okay. Mm-hmm. None of us is 100% because the only one 100% is God and he doesn't do psychic fairs. But I can also cut a reading short. Example was a woman who came to me and said, I want to know where my husband is sleeping with his mistress. I said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Cunningham, but that is remote spying. Oh, well, how many has he slept with? I can't tell you that. God, you're no good. Well, is he going to die soon and leave me his money? What's going on there?
Jeez.
And I just looked at my front person. I said, Laura, please give her money back. I did not suggest anybody else, but I sent her out of the booth. Because that's disrespectful for me and none of her damn business.
Right. Right. Did you get the number in your head, though?
No. No, because you see, what is remote spying? Let's take Brangelina. When they were married, Brad could ask about Angelina. Angelina can ask about Brad. They're split now. You don't spy on one of them for the other. Because that's saying that your desire trumps Brad or Angelina's free will. That's right. Why people are scared of psychics. They think we have no morals, which is a load.
Oh, yeah. I would think just talking, like asking questions about anyone else is probably not.
No.
No?
There's an exception.
Okay. What's that?
Parents can ask about children and spy on them any way they want. But if your mom or dad comes to me, same deal. Don't yell at me.
Okay. I'm not going to give my mom your number.
Good.
Yeah. So in doing this, have you ever been yourself? We talked about the fears that people have in going to psychics. Have you yourself ever been fearful of something that you've read or felt?
No.
How about when somebody's doing a reading for you?
I do not let anybody read for me health-wise because I'm a hypochondriac. You know, but I've done the cancer dance 3 times. I may have a good reason. If I need to know something about health, there is one medical intuitive in the United States that I feel is the best. She's been my friend for over 20 years. That's Stacy Wills. I'll ask Stacy. Because Stacy picked up my third bout of breast cancer when the doctors missed it.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, that's like drive-by psychic shootings. I want to get into that. That's very important. Because that's why people get scared. You know, they watch the Long Island Medium and, you know, she's in Wegmans and she walks up to a woman feeling up a cantaloupe and she goes, excuse me, your Aunt Doris, she says you have a bald tire in the back and you're going to die in a car accident if you don't get it fixed. She's telling you and walks away. That's bull. Number one, her PR people all went to all the Wegmans on Long Island and picked one. Then they interviewed people and had them sign model releases and then they rehearsed it 6 times. But unless you know that, other psychics feel they can just come up to you in any place and say, I have a message for you and start delivering. You don't know them from Adam's house cat.
Right.
And you have a right to say, I don't want the information. And if they keep trying to give to you, you call the manager and say you're being harassed.
If somebody wants to reach out to you, how do they do that?
Oh God, Russ, they can't avoid me. you go to my website, corbymitline.com. It's got testimonials, a video on me. It's got articles, it's got 22 different kinds of readings that you can do from a quick 3-minute burning question to my 12-hour deep trance soul plane readings. You can find me on Facebook at Corby Mitline, Psychic at Fire Through Spirit, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Medium, YouTube, and on Patreon, and it's all under Corby Mitline.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and helping us learn more about psychics.
Oh, it was a bunch of fun. Thanks.
And thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you. And thank you for rating this podcast. And of course, sharing it with friends. That's a beautiful thing to do too. It really helps out. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. And we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. I invite you to check out my business podcast, DIY for Business. You can do so by going to DIYforBusinessPodcast.com. It's a fun one. Check it out. I host it with my friend Greg. We've known each other for years. It's a fantastic little podcast for you to go check out. We've got some great episodes coming up. We're going to learn about food deserts. Something that I had no idea about. We're going to be learning about that in the next couple of weeks. We've got plenty of other things to learn about, like, for instance, a healthy diet, like not just what you're eating, but what you're doing. We'll be talking about that coming up soon here, too. If you've got something that you would like to learn more about, just let me know. Head over to learningmorepodcast.com and let me know. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.